the state of Ohio just approved a fiscal recovery plan for the Mount Healthy City School District. This comes as many cash-strapped school districts across the state are asking voters to approve levies this fall. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Zach Carrion, filling in for Lucy May. But voters are cash-strapped too, with spiked property taxes, and they may be wondering, with those property taxes going in part to fund schools, why do districts need a new levy? Here to answer those questions are Cincinnati Public School Board of Education Vice President Eve Bolton. Good to have you as always, Eve.
Thank you.
And Mount Healthy City School District Superintendent Sarah Wilson. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
And we have Support Ohio Schools founder Jerry Rampout. Thank you for being here, Jerry.
I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. Let's get right into it. Eve, got a question for you. The Cincinnati Public Schools levy, tell us a little bit about it. How much is this going to cost taxpayers, and how much and what will this be funding?
Thank you so much for the question and the opportunity to share. This levy or renewal that we have was first passed in 2016, and it has been renewed once before in 2020, and so it's up for its second renewal. It will not raise taxes. Fortunately, it's a renewal, and it raises $48 million annually, 15 of which is dedicated and divided to preschool only, both within Cincinnati Public Schools, where we have 130 different preschool classes, but also, as everyone will remember, Preschool Promise some years ago, where we're also helping to make sure that our private providers throughout the community also receive money, subsidy, as well as professional development money and what have you. So that will be the reason that we're doing it, and it's been great. And a matter of fact, one of the results, I think, is that Cincinnati Public Schools came in first among the eight urbans in early literacy, and we're very excited about that. So we need this money and look forward to passage.
And going from a renewal levy to a new operating levy, Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about Mount Healthy's financial fiscal situation? Just to give us a little background, you guys are in a fiscal emergency, but also a fiscal recovery plan has just been approved.
That is correct. So Mount Healthy City School District was placed in fiscal emergency in 2024. Since then, we've been working really hard with the state auditor and our fiscal supervision commission to try to be more accountable to our public and to our community. We just recently got our financial recovery plan approved by the state, which has been really 16 months in the making. So lots of hard work and dedication went into getting that plan approved, and that really should demonstrate to our community that we're working hard and are dedicated to really good stewardship of public funds.
And what has gone into that plan? What are some of the major things to look out for? Because certainly the school district has cut some things already.
Correct. So a number of cuts. We've cut over 100 staff positions. That includes staff at all levels, administrators, teachers, clerical staff, custodial staff, et cetera. We have gone to state minimum transportation this year. So our high school students no longer receive busing to and from school. And we did the 2-mile radius in accordance with state minimum. So all of those things are actually part of the plan, everything that's been happening since we went into fiscal emergency in 2024. Additionally, we've renegotiated many of our vendor contracts. So some have been eliminated altogether, and then ones that we just could not eliminate for various reasons have been renegotiated. And so with all of those things, and then also implementing some better practices on the accounting side in the treasurer's department and in within our district leadership, that has all gone into the getting that financial recovery plan approved.
And certainly voters approving a levy will help with that situation. But I know it's been a while for the school district since they passed a levy. How long has it been?
Since 2003. So 22 years since an operating levy passed in Mount Healthy City School District. There was a bond issue that passed in, I think it was around 2010, where they built new buildings. But that is not part of our operating costs. So we have rising operating costs just as everyone else does. I know my personal electric bill has gone up quite a bit in just the past year. So the schools face the same thing. So that $3 million levy that's on the ballot right now would help us with our rising operating costs.
And to Jerry, give us a broad overview of levies in the state. Are voters generally supportive of them? And is there a difference between renewal levies and new operating levies?
Yeah, for this November, there are 118 levies on the ballot among the school districts. 47 are requesting additional funding. That means if it passes, the property tax or income tax of those voters will go up. 64 are renewals of an existing levy, and then there are 7 substitute levies, and I'm not going to go into the weeds about describing a substitute levy. Mm-hmm. Just to give you some historical background, if you go back to 2007 to 2024, that 17-year time period, there were just under 5,000 levies in Ohio for schools. 36.5% of new ones passed, and almost 90% of renewals passed. That is numbers that are fairly consistent when you look long term. But then we have anomalies. Last year, 23% of the new requests passed and 72% of renewals. Now compare 36 to 23% and essentially 90% to 72%. In May, don't want to get too many numbers here, but in May, new levies passed at a rate of 47%, which is a dramatic increase from 2024, a doubling, and just over 91% of renewals passed. So you see what I'm telling you, you get fluctuations from year to year in terms of passage rates, but it is not easy to pass a levy for additional funding. You know, just over a third will pass. So many districts have to go back to the board voters multiple times.
We are talking about local school levies and what you need to know before heading to the polls. This is Cincinnati Edition. Jerry, I want to stick with you on this one as well. Are you seeing schools becoming more dependent on passing levies to balance their budgets and keep certain programs and operations going? And why do you think that is?
Well, the reason is rather easy to explain to you. 88% of school-age K-12 students in Ohio go to public schools. 12% go to a parochial school or a charter school. Yet, for the state, puts money in to assist with school funding, 75% goes to the 88% of kids attending public K-12 schools district. The 12% attending private schools, charter schools, they get 25% of the state money. What the legislature has done is taken money that was traditionally going to public schools and has given it to the 12% of the students who attend either a parochial or a charter school. That has been a significant. The Fair School Funding passed several years ago, and they decided they couldn't afford it. And we have many districts now on the ballot simply because they did not go through with the Fair School Funding plan that had been passed by the General Assembly.
And Eve, I know you pay attention to what happens in Columbus pretty closely. What has changed with school funding, with the Fair School Funding plan in recent years, and how has that impacted funding for Cincinnati Public Schools?
Great question, and thanks, Jerry, for all that data. It's very important. I know we listened very carefully to it, and we're going to use that data again. What's happened is that the burden on the local taxpayer has increased significantly in the last 10 years, let's say, because over the last 10 years, the role that both the state government and to a lesser extent the federal government is playing for those dollars that are going to public schools. And indeed, as everyone knows, for a generation, it's been ruled that our way of funding our schools is unconstitutional. They came up with a pretty good plan several years ago called the Fair School Funding Plan, and it worked. It was in place for maybe a year, And then by its second and third year, they decided it was too expensive. Well, one of the reasons it was too expensive is that more than $1 billion is now going into the Universal Voucher Plan. And that's taking money away from public schools. The other piece I think is important in that I think there's been a large attack, frankly, on public education and public teachers' unions and what have you. So there's this negative undercurrent that's there. But the single most important thing is the reduction of staff, reduction of dollars, I should say, from both the state and now looming with this particular administration federally. We've already been told that we're not going to be seeing the federal dollars that go to our kids that are economically disadvantaged or our immigrant kids or for professional development for our teachers. So now we're looking at a drain of federal dollars as well, compounding the drain of state dollars.
And Sarah, I want to get to Mount Healthy on this as well. Certainly, there's been some fluctuation in federal and state money, which is requiring the school district to rely more on local support. What has that been like for the school district?
Sure. So this year alone, we faced a $1.2 million reduction in state aid over what we had last year. And then our federal funding through IDEA-B and title funding, et cetera, has decreased some as well. And it does make it very difficult to plan as a district long term and to try to plan for how to get out of a fiscal emergency when we can't effectively count on the dollars to remain consistent from the state and federal government.
We are going to continue our discussion in just a moment. And later in the program, the history of Cincinnati's DIY music venues. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm education reporter Zach Carrion, filling in for Lucy May. We're discussing local school levies on the ballot with Mount Healthy City Schools Superintendent Sarah Wilson, Support Ohio Schools founder Jerry Rampelt, and Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education Vice President Eve Bolton. Now, we touched on the impact of school vouchers, ed choice vouchers on school districts and how it affects funding, but I think it's worth elaborating on how it actually affects school funding, because certainly proponents of ed choice vouchers say it's a different pot of money. It is not the shared pot of money of public schools. I think, Eve Bolton, you can talk about this as well. How does the voucher program impact school districts like Cincinnati Public Schools, where there are a lot of kids using this program?
Well, the single most important effect really is that it is only one pot of money. It's the same line item in the state budget. And so whatever money, $1.2 billion or whatever, is going into vouchers, universal vouchers now, is not coming to public schools. Plus, the more that that's done, the more kind of work we in the public sector have to pay for transportation for those kids going to those schools or pay for other special services because those schools don't necessarily hire all of the people that are involved with special ed or kids that need particular help. Those usually are coming from the public sector and being housed there, not necessarily hired there. So that's the impact. It's less money. It's more of a drain on staff. And also, it's very important for people to understand that years ago when vouchers began, it was a really good idea because it was the idea that if your child was having to attend a public school that was lowly rated, that you could choose and you could earn and have a voucher based upon that. Now it's universal vouchers, and regardless of your income, regardless of your school, where you might be going or not going, you will get a voucher. And what we find is the vast majority of the money is now going to people that were already sending their kids to private school. And also, it's beginning to drain, if you will, demographically, the middle class, upper middle class kids from public schools. It's also beginning to have an impact demographically with our student enrollment as to which kids are remaining in public versus which now are expanding into private.
And Jerry, across Ohio, are we seeing the expansion of vouchers impact the success or even the necessity of levies for public schools?
Well, it will impact the need for having a levy. If you lose students, you lose the money. And I'd like to add one point. I have been in hundreds of school districts in the state of Ohio, talked with board members, teachers, superintendents, and we have had an ongoing message for decades that schools are failing. And it used to be much better in the good old days. Well, I'm going to just mention some things about the good old days. In 1955, 38% of the kids dropped out of high school. 38%. 1975, 20 years later, it was down to 25%. Now in 2025, 88% of the kids graduate. And let me tell you, it's substantially different in 2025 than prior years, because in 1994, this General Assembly said, you're going to have state testing. And if the kid doesn't pass the state test, we don't care if they passed all their coursework, they're not going to get a diploma. So not only do they have to complete the coursework, they have to complete the state test to get a high school diploma. So kids are performing today at a higher level than they ever have in the history of Ohio. We tend to forget that there was a whole lot of kids who never got out of high school, dropped out. And the last point I want to mention is the fabulous story about career tech. The state of Ohio, many decades ago, began having joint vocational school districts. They're now called career tech centers. These are kids at 18 years old walk out to a job. Their placement rate is over 90% for the kids who have a diploma from there finding a job in their field.
And Jerry, sticking with you, is there a difference in the success rate of levies when we're dealing with wealthy school districts and wealthy communities versus high poverty school districts?
There's a dramatic difference. If you look at the state and you look at the large, what we call high wealth suburban districts, they put a levy on the ballot. The people in those communities have greater wealth. They're able to pay for it and still continue their lifestyle. So they have high percentage, high passage rates for new money. And they spend more per pupil in those particular school districts. The cities tend to pass their levies also. But then if you get outside those areas, it becomes much more difficult to pass levies when there is not a great deal of property wealth in the community, or if you have folks in that community who are living paycheck to paycheck. And so what we see is the data I gave you, but if you take the suburban districts, the wealth suburban districts, they have a much higher passage rate.
And Sarah, Mount Healthy is certainly one of those high poverty districts, and it's been a struggle to pass a levy recently. You guys have tried several times at this point. And, you know, you look at a district like Mount Healthy, you should be getting more federal funding, more state funding than, you know, a lot of the other schools around the state. But what have been some issues with that? And why is kind of the levy model not really working for Mount Healthy right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. We know that it's very difficult for our community members sometimes to even meet basic needs, and that we have parents working multiple jobs and, you know, just trying to support their families. So we really examined what an affordable rate would be for our levy, which is why we chose just a 3 mil levy, which for a $100,000 home will cost about $8.75 a month. But again, we know that that's a hardship. 100% of our students receive free lunch. With all that being said, we've still managed to have a 92% graduation rate this year. So we're doing really good things in Mount Healthy. And we, at this point, because of the cuts to state and federal funding, don't really have another option but to ask our residents to support by upping the local share.
Now, here in Ohio, the rise in property taxes has been a big issue this year, and there are some attempts out there to change that. Jerry, what is the role of spiking property taxes having on the success or failure of levies? Is it becoming an issue in the most recent years?
It is an issue. And of course, when you get the reevaluation of the property, that's not a reflection of how much your property tax is going to go up. But people get this, so to speak, sticker fright. And they're, you know, The Ohio Supreme Court ruled in 1997 that property tax should not be the basis for public education, but it was ignored. Supreme Court decision was ignored. And so now we do have folks who are concerned about the level of property tax. But there's the reality of the property tax and what they think, how much it is in their minds because of how the reevaluation is done and how that's communicated.
Now, Eve, going to you, I know CPS has gotten a lot of consistent support on its levies from the communities, but certainly the levy this year, you guys changed it from a 5-year renewal to a 10-year renewal. What was behind that? And is there concern that support for levies like this might be waning?
I think the thing to emphasize there is that I've been on the board 18 years, and fortunately at Cincinnati Public, to Jerry's point, we've only had one levy for new money that has failed, but that was where the board was somewhat divided. For us on the preschool promise, $48 million won't raise your taxes, the reason that we've gone for a 10-year is for financial stability. And little did we know that the state legislature necessarily was already contemplating changing how we can tax people or not tax people. And so this 10-year looks like a bit of genius, but it's for a decade. And we felt very strongly, we used to have and would continue what they call emergency fix sum levies, where it's every 5 years. We want to be held accountable. We want to compete in the marketplace for these efforts and these dollars of the tax folks. But the reality is we've moved it to 10 for fiscal responsibility and stability.
And sticking with you, we have a listener question that somebody just sent in. They're asking about the preschool promise piece of the levy. Now, preschool promises, is supported by this levy in part. Somebody is asking about the private provider element of it. How does funding for private providers through Preschool Promise differ from funding for vouchers and charter schools and things like that?
Well, that's an important thought. The reality is that it's a public dollar. People are concerned about it being spent in a private way. But what was decided back in 2016, that there was such a need for preschool for our 3-year-olds and our 4-year-olds, regardless of the community or zip code in which they lived, that we needed as a public-private partnership to contribute together and use the dollars, divide that $15 million up in half, and use it for both subsidy and also development of the private providers so that we not only expanded preschool for obvious reasons, but indeed expanded quality seats. So it's a targeted effort available to all folks, and it is for the public purpose.
And Sarah, obviously, there is going to be a lot at stake with this levy. It's a good chunk of funding each year. Now, I know some things are on the table for cuts and some things that are a little scary. Sports is one of them that kind of gets a lot of people's attention. What is at stake for Mount Healthy with this levy?
Sure. If the levy passes, it will help support rising operating costs. It will help us maintain existing sports and other extracurricular activities. If it does not pass, we will have to look at additional cuts. And unfortunately, because we already are at state minimums in a lot of different areas, sports and extracurriculars will be the kind of the next thing to be looked at if the levy does not pass.
And I know we mentioned the override, DeWine's veto, and these new restrictions on the kind of levies that can go on the ballot. It won't affect the levies in this election, but certainly will have impacts for the future. Jerry, I'm hoping you can answer this one. What will those new restrictions mean for school districts down the line? And does this mean that districts are going to have to get creative?
Yeah, the people in this state love their local school districts. I know I'm a numbers guy, but if you go back historically and look at all the levies and lump the voters together, 55% to 45% vote in favor. That doesn't mean an individual one may not pass, but meaning that over half of the voters say, I want to continue being taxed for my public school district. Imagine if you had the right to vote on your income tax. Would we have a passage rate of that level? Probably not. The school district is an integral part of the community.
Jerry, I'm going to have to cut you off there because we are running out of time. I know there's a lot of questions to get to still, but I've been speaking with Mount Healthy City School District Superintendent Sarah Wilson, CPS Board of Education Vice President E. Bolton, and Support Ohio Schools founder Jerry Rampelt. Thank you all for being here and being a part of this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, Call Them Basement Shows DIY Unsanctioned, the history of Cincinnati's underground venues. This is Cincinnati Edition.